There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I am here with Sarah Basha, and we're back after taking last week off. Robbie and I were actually out in California for a podcasting conference, Podcast Movement, which was fantastic. But it's good to be back now, and this week, Sarah and I will be discussing all the million and one things that's happened since we were last on. Sarah, how are you doing, aside from recovering from your move?
I'm still recovering from it. I'm not totally over. But yeah, it's been a week, and I'm just still finding boxes in weird places and still unpacking.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I moved like 5 years ago. I still think I have stuff I haven't dealt with.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm super exhausted because, you know, after work and stuff, I get home really late. So it's really hard to get all these boxes open on time.
Yeah, well, the good news is, if you don't finish up soon, we may have nuclear war, and it won't be important anymore.
Necessary to unpack.
Yeah. I really had put it off for like a week or two just to make sure.
Oh my gosh.
Given how much Trump is talking about preventive war with North Korea,
yeah,
it's getting a little bit dicey over there.
Yeah. You know, the hydrogen bomb testing and versus an actual nuclear warhead. And it's just it's been very unnerving, especially since we've been in the middle of an Eid celebration. And I was very distracted trying to look at the news on that issue. So.
Yeah, it's not like, all joking aside, we're presumably not going into nuclear war tomorrow. But the talk from the Trump administration is so bellicose, and it's so not aimed at stability. It's concerning.
Well, also, it's the traditional, you know, whether or not he's going to listen to the generals that are so close to him in the cabinet, or so we think are supposed to be, but his advisors are, you know, whether he's going to listen to what they have to say or he's going to take off on his own.
I'm trying to think of what I've heard about Kelly and his approach to the North Korea issue. I'm not recalling anything offhand.
He seems to me to be very consumed in just trying to get the structure in place at his new job. And I'm not sure he wants to say too much about the issues right now. So
I'm not sure he has time for that either, given what he's been doing to try and bring some stability back into the Trump administration.
Yeah, I was just reading an article on how he was trying to, you know, keep Omarosa at bay and, you know, keep her out of the office because she had a history of kind of inflaming the president and getting him all riled up about, you know, issues that are on the sideline, really.
Yeah, I believe the word that was used was triggering.
Exactly. So I think he's like I said, I think he's consumed with more administrative stuff and not saying as much because, you know, this is a high stakes situation. And I think the generals are pretty much the best equipped to assist in this area, and he's probably leaving it up to them. But at the same time, it's always
he's not leaving
unclear.
It up to them. If he's leaving it up to them, he wouldn't be tweeting things he's tweeting right now.
Oh no, I was talking about Kelly.
Oh right.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's probably a good place to start off with our first section on who's still in the White House and who is not.
Yeah,
it seems like that changes about every week, let alone every fortnight.
Yeah.
But it's a quick roundup. Obviously, a couple weeks back, we had, finally, Steve Bannon out. And he very quickly resumed his duties at Breitbart.
Why do I always feel like even though he's out, he's kind of still there, lingering?
Because he's only partially out.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to some articles come out recently, whenever babysitter Kelly is not around, Trump sneaks out his private phone and makes calls to Bannon.
Yeah. I didn't think he'd go. And same with Gorka. I didn't think that. I think even if these guys are gone from the limelight, they're somewhere in the background, or at least their philosophies are. So,
what was Gorka's statement after he got the boot? So that brings to Gorka. Gorka is now out officially. He was. They essentially changed the locks on him at the White House. A notice went out on a Friday saying Gorka is no longer permitted to be here. And Gorka has. Essentially, the only role he was playing, as far as anyone can tell from the outside, is appearing on TV and making ridiculous statements in favor of Trump. For that and a variety of reasons, Kelly also had him on a short list to get removed. And there's a lot of drama going on with how he got expelled from the White House. He was apparently on vacation for 2 weeks before his firing, which you don't typically see 2-week vacations during her first year in the White House. It does seem more as if they were trying to force Gorka to resign, give him, you know, a chance to leave with some dignity. He refused to take it. And finally, Kelly said, OK, that's enough. You're gone. And terminated him.
Wow. Yeah.
Have you seen Gorka's his prior appearances on TV?
I've seen the very earlier ones, but I stopped following that stuff because some of it's pretty outrageous. So I just, you know.
He's just not very bright and very confident in what he says.
He's not informed at all. And that was the issue. I mean, it's pretty much the pattern of most of the people in the cabinet. So,
yeah, he has no real expertise, no real experience. He has a fake PhD. Yeah. So we're all better off for him being gone. And that brings us to the next one. We already mentioned Omarosa. I forget her last name, and I guess she doesn't need one.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
She is well known for her experience as a failed candidate on The Apprentice reality TV show. And with that sterling credential, it's unsurprising that she was hired by the White House. However, apparently she had a habit of printing out like fake news articles and handing them to Trump to piss him off and get him riled up on a topic. So Kelly had to fire her, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole thing sounds like a giant Apprentice episode.
Yeah. And the best part of it is, apparently, Trump can't figure out how to read Breitbart himself. So without Omarosa there to send him the articles or to print them out for him, he's lost.
Yeah, apparently they used to throw him off track and kind of ruin his day so he wouldn't be able to focus on the larger issues at hand.
Or like the real issues.
So I think, you know, what's going to change with her being gone? I mean, is it going to be more calm or the tweet's going to be more nuanced, or
maybe he'll learn how to surf the web and find Breitbart himself.
Yeah, who knows?
That seems unlikely.
I don't think the tweets are going to change just because she's out.
No, but if he has less access to Breitbart, it's probably a good thing too. And it's really like that swamp is really draining. There's seemingly an endless supply of unqualified people in the White House with extreme alt-right views. But really, I mean, what we're like. It's definitely severely weeded down from what it was at the start of this presidency's heyday back in January.
There's definitely more of that pariah kind of aura to the White House now than when we started out, at least, because people seem to be trying to make things work, trying to put the right people in the right place. And now it seems like it's just people are running away.
Yeah, they actually just can't hire people for some jobs because it's, well, one, there's the risk of extremely high lawyer fees from the Russian investigation. So people who might, despite that, you know, pariah status, might take a job are saying they financially can't do it, which means there's a lot of unfilled positions that even Trump, who has taken a stance about not actually hiring people for God knows what reason, he'd like some of those positions filled, and he can't find anyone who's willing to take them.
Yeah, that's scary. We happen to be a nation with the most talented people in the world, and yet, you know, they're not in the White House right now.
Yeah. So that brings us to the newest termination in the White House. Keith Schiller, apparently, as of a few hours ago, is officially, well, he's not out yet, but gonna be out. I think by the end of the month.
Yeah, I found this a weird one. Like, what are the financial reasons? I mean, it's not like this administration goes scot-free for any of its financial dealings, you know, overtly how they seemed with everywhere from Russia to tax reporting and all that stuff. But what was the financial reasons on this one? I didn't understand this one.
Well, apparently he only has a salary of $165,000 at the White House, and that was not enough for him to survive on. So he's going back to the private market where he can get a paycheck more like his old one.
Hmm. So yeah. He wasn't getting paid enough, and it's as simple as that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily bet on that, but that's the stated reason they come up with.
I don't know. I couldn't figure that one out.
I mean, it's not even entirely clear. Like, I mean, Keith Schiller is basically the bodyguard. I mean, I think his official title was like director of Oval Office operations, but he's the bodyguard. That was like how Trump found him however many years ago. And of course, he's now sort of tagged along to get this prestigious job in the White House that he's now decided doesn't pay enough. So out he goes.
Yeah, that one is a strange one to me. I didn't understand what those financial reasons were. My mind started going all, you know, back into all the possible things that he could get entrapped into. And then I'm like, those are not the real financial reasons. I mean, it can't just be, I wasn't paid enough. You don't go into those positions not knowing whether or not, you know, the pay scale's okay.
Like, you think when he accepted the job, he saw the paycheck. He's like, you know what? That's not enough for me.
Maybe the job responsibilities didn't kind of amount to the compensation. Or
his last job was with the Trump Organization. And I don't know if anyone's going to pay him as much as the Trump Organization was. Like, I feel like no one would pay him as much as the Trump Organization was if he was making apparently like $300,000 as a bodyguard before.
No, I wouldn't. Do these guys go off and consult places? And
I guess he is now, but like, that's his only qualification, is that he was Trump's bodyguard.
I don't know how that looks on a resume.
Yeah. And the only thing he's done in the White House that I'm aware of, that's, you know, kind of made the news, is that he like delivered a letter that fired James Comey as FBI director.
Yeah, that's the first time I was exposed to him. I didn't really notice him that much before that. Hi, all entrepreneurs and startup people. In today's digital business world, the face-to-face meeting still matters. But you can skip the noisy coffee shops and expensive hotel conference rooms and simply book on DaVinci Meeting Room. DaVinci provides you instant access to over 5,000 incredibly affordable meeting rooms in well-known office locations in every city. And they make it really easy. Just search, book, and meet. Your DaVinci meeting room comes fully staffed and equipped with all the latest technology plus high-speed internet. And whether you need a day office or a conference room, a boardroom, or a training space, they have what you need to make your next business meeting a success. And best of all, the meeting rooms just start at $10 an hour. So entrepreneurs, startup people, and Fortune 500 companies all enhance their images with professional meeting spaces from DaVinci. Book your space now at DaVinciMeeting.com/45 and you get the first hour on them. That's DaVinciMeeting.com/45 and your first hour is free. Terms and conditions apply. For details, see DaVinciMeeting.com/45. Where are you holding your next meeting?
So that brings us to another prominent termination, although this time was not from the White House. Sheriff David Clark is out as the Milwaukee County Sheriff. Which would be good news, except it seems like that could be a prelude to him joining the Trump administration.
As?
God knows what. Like, at this point, it could be Director of Homeland Security. That's something that's been kind of thrown about. I hope to God even Trump's not that stupid, but, you know.
Wow.
Again, wouldn't bet against it.
Sheriff Arpaio.
God, Sheriff Arpaio is apparently going to run in Arizona. It was what someone was saying, or... I mean, the man was 85 years old, and that was one of the reasons that Trump gave for why he's going to pardon him. You know, he's just too old to survive federal prison, I guess. But apparently he's not too old to run for office, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know, if you compare this to past administrations, I don't know that anyone, as a Republican president, would pardon someone with that egregious a background and... You know, no matter what the loyalty to the police force and, you know.
But why would you want to? Here's the reason he wants to, because he wants to encourage targeting of minorities. That's what Trump is saying. Basically, he did not like that Arpaio was convicted of refusing to obey a court order that ordered him to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
Yeah, and that doesn't bode well with Charlottesville put together. I just don't know, you know. I don't know if there's so much merit to just being so crass and following where your loyalties are without respect to what's going on around you.
I don't think it's just loyalties. He wants
fanning the flames of racism.
Well, he wants to encourage law enforcement to take this kind of action and saying, hey, if you get in trouble for it, don't worry. I got your back.
It's a wrong message to give after Charlottesville and just in general.
Well, it's the wrong message if you want to have a message of non-racism.
That's what bothers me. It divides our country even more because then people associate that with Republicanism and conservatism. And it's not. This is just Trumpism.
At what point is it conservatism? At what point is it Republicanism? Because they're endorsing this. I mean, they did have some tweets about how they were disappointed. I know Paul Ryan tweeted that he was disappointed in what Trump was doing here, but that's not a rejection of a really blatantly racist move.
No, I think there was a lot more anti-Trump statements coming out after Charlottesville among Republicans than I've ever seen on any other issue. And even here in Virginia, we had people running for governor, including, you know, the Republican candidate, Ed Gillespie, who said that there's no moral equivalency between, you know, the two sides. And I think people have been more vocal.
Some were vocal, but what did they do about it?
I don't know. You know, I feel like they're just waiting for him to bury himself. That's cowardly. It is, but how much more damage is going to be done? I mean, it's almost like I said, it's a pariah kind of administration. No one's really touching it. They're just, you know, trying to distance themselves. And, you know, all the major players that used to be sort of related to establishment, from, you know, Spicer to all the other guys, and, you know, they're out. So, you know, it's almost like there's no real connection.
Except the Republicans control both branches of Congress and could take action to stop some of the chaos going on, or choosing not to. At a certain point, it doesn't matter if you prefer not to be away. If you are on board a bus heading that direction and you know it, you can't really distance yourself from that. That's not something you still have responsibility for what's happening there.
No, and I get heartburn over that, because I'm like, okay, we can't deflect from who this person is and how they're doing things and focus on legislation. It's almost like we're deflecting, and it just doesn't look good. It isn't good. It's not how this country should be running itself. So,
yeah. And as someone pointed out, it looks like Trump is falling for some of the Republicans' past positions, where Trump makes the mistake of actually believing them when they say things, like about DACA. I think Trump, you can blame him because he's president. I don't know better. But one can see how Trump would have believe that actually Republicans wanted it gone.
Yeah. There again, I think, you know, I think on one of the episodes I'd pointed out to how Republicans and their local leadership are so out of touch with reality that that's probably their downfall. And I think the DACA issue points to that problem.
Wait, are they out of touch with reality, though? Or are they just exploiting their voter base?
Well, to me, that seems out of touch with reality. You're not serving the country. You're out for self-interest, or you're trying to maintain your, like you said, voter base. It's just that shouldn't take precedence. And that's what it's become. And it's embarrassing. And it's also something that I hope will, you know, maybe it's a good thing and it'll be exposed, hopefully. And maybe people try to fix themselves before the party becomes irrelevant or just goes through a complete, you know, complete. I don't know what's going to happen. I feel like it needs to be changed. And if it doesn't come from within, it's going to be bad for our country. Because to me, those conservative values are what we need to keep floating, and I'll say that as a conservative. But I think that if we mix that up with the loyalty to party politics, the point of not respecting conservative values, then we're in trouble. And I think that's where we're going. It's all about the money. It's all about the power. It's all about the, you know, sticking to those old time values that sort of are not moving with the reality of how everything from demographics to what our country needs. It's being rigid, you know, and it's not fair to us normal people who want to see a change.
And of course, it's also about pissing off liberals. That seems to be the other major tenet of the Republican Party platform.
it seems childish. But, you know, with all due respect to the media, I really do think they kind of blow things out of proportion. There's an outright war happening now. So everything Republican, everything conservative is crazy and stupid. And I think that's unfair.
But it kind of is right now. It's hard to disagree with that. Look what's happening in the world. I mean, what are Republicans doing? What have Republicans done in the past 6 months that was not just helping Trump do what he's doing?
Well, see, and then no one's writing stories about the good stuff they're doing. And that's
but what are they? If they're out there,
there's a lot of good stuff happening at local levels. I mean, not everything is 100% bad. It's
that's also stuff that wouldn't make the national news. And I'm assuming
exactly. And that's what I'm saying.
But it never news would. Always, like, even if it was like bad, like it's the local stuff that is naturally reported on local publications. Like in any news cycle for any party, it wouldn't make the national headlines.
Take for instance that whole stiletto heels thing in going to Texas. That was, I think, a bit much, because the woman, she's walking to the plane in D.C. in those shoes, but she's not going to deplane it in Texas.
She had to borrow someone else's shoes.
I don't know about that. But
yeah, she did. She had to borrow someone else's shoes when she got there.
Okay, but you know what? That's not the end-all and be-all story. I think the media just had a field trip with it, and I do get that it's a valid point.
I didn't see that much on. I saw a lot of complaints that was reported on.
Yeah, I saw too much. I'm like, okay, who cares what she's wearing? Let's focus on the people that need help right now. But it's a media for you. It's a circus either way.
I mean, that's okay, I don't care about that.
Or do you think it was social media more than anything? I saw a lot of outrage.
Yeah, that's social media. And like, I mean, yeah, it's you don't wear stilettos to like help with hurricane relief.
No, so disrespectful, because, you know, you're so into how you're legs or your feet are looking, or how you need to be looking when you're out, supposedly out to go help people in, you know, whose lives are in danger. It's lives are being lost. It's not a joke.
Yeah. Well, to resume our list of who's still there and who's not, we have Tillerson, who is still in. But maybe on the outs, based on recent tensions between him and Trump. Have you followed that at all?
You know, I was going to say, of everybody that's been in the administration, my last hope was with him, because I think, he's a corporate executive, he's a big wig, but he seemed to have some, he seemed to be sort of the more mellow kind of thoughtful person trying to do the right thing. It scares me if he's gone, because it's already bad. I don't see where we'd go, and I don't even see any possible replacement that would pull off what he, you know, could or couldn't have pulled off.
He's been a disaster all around, I wasn't ever like thrilled with him, but what I don't get is how, like, okay, theoretically the dude should be able to be a manager. He was a manager at Exxon. Like, of all the skills he may lack as Secretary of State, like, being a manager should have been not one of the ones that was absent. But he's just been useless.
Like, I think his hands were tied in a lot of that management stuff. He wanted to make some appointments he wasn't allowed to make. You know, I'm not saying that he was completely not to blame.
He has to give up?
But I don't know that. I don't know if, you know, if you're not given the tools that you need, how powerful or how effective could you be?
You could use the tools that are existing already that are there for you instead of cutting them all off and...
Well, listen, there are a lot of liberals and Democrats who left State Department and left some of their government posts because they didn't want
it there. They're leaving because they feel like they're not doing anything and that they have no ability to affect diplomacy in the world right now.
Yeah, and so you can't put the whole blame on him for that draining of the swamp.
But that is him. If he's the one who's doing this.
It's like a giant protest. Everyone's just marched out, and I think that left him with huge voice that he had to fill.
But look what he's doing. He's failing to the new hiring program that they've had for, like, you know, to encourage new diplomats to come through the ranks. He's essentially put the kibosh on that.
Yeah, but listen, if his background is in the corporate area, how much is he going to know about, you know, the State Department and diplomacy in that kind of world to be hiring all the right people on the spot if there are empty spaces left? And see, that's the thing. That's what Trump's been doing consistently, is hiring people that are just misfits for positions. I mean, I thought he was real. I wasn't a fan of his joining, but then when he came on board, I was like, okay, he looks a little bit more like he knows what he's doing, or he could handle this, or he might not be so bad. But, you know, it's a combination. It's never 100% one thing. I think it's also that Democrats and liberals and people from the Obama administration just wanted to leave. They didn't want to have much to do with this new administration. People have left, but there are also people who stayed because they believe their jobs are important. And I don't think he's been horribly, you know, I don't think he's been visceral or awful with them. I just think that
feel that way. There's a lot of complaints inside Foggy Bottom right now. And most of them are about his plain old managing skills. Like, it's shocking the way he is sort of micromanaging the important stuff and just ignoring the actual mission of the organization.
Yeah.
And it seems like he is, in fact, cutting out the old guard, the experienced ones, the ones who actually are diplomats, in favor of a small group of people loyal to him, but without much diplomatic experience.
I don't think, as businessmen, I think understand that you need to have people with the right talent in the right spot. So I don't think he's...
See, that's the whole point. Like, he absolutely should understand this. Like, that's the weird thing about it. You think if nothing else, you'd have that skill set. And yet everyone Foggy Bottom is saying, no, that's not happening. He is not trying to find people who know what they're doing. He's basically cutting them out they have no access to him.
Yeah, this brings me to the question of whether or not the Republicans in general in the U.S. have enough. You know, I get that we've had 8 years of Obama, and so we've had a lot of liberals in the State Department, and they've been carrying out kind of liberal approaches, you know, whether it's, you know, Lightfoot approaches and diplomatic approaches to solving world problems. But where are the Republicans that can really handle international affairs and foreign policy and diplomacy? That's my question. If we could find those people, maybe Tillerson wouldn't have such a tough time, or maybe he should be seeking those.
There are plenty of them there.
Yeah, but I don't seem to see anyone that has like X years of experience and is a great fit for this, and I don't see that happening, and I think it makes his job really tough. No comment.
The thing is, they're not, like, 8 years is not that long in terms of our, like, diplomatic career staff. There are plenty and plenty of people came in under Republicans, under other Democrats.
No, I agree with you.
It's not like it's a Democrat like majority run. Like, it's not like that. It's a mixed organization that's dedicated to the service. They're not about partisan. I mean, they're obviously partisan positions there, but the overall staff, that's not what they're there for. And that's not what they're.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you, but I think that's what it's become, unfortunately. And I do understand that every administration will take its time to make that shift in the way they approach diplomacy. But this has been exceptionally difficult because of what the White House and the executive is.
Yeah. Well, despite all these complaints about the performance of Rex Tillerson and how he's diminishing our ability to have a diplomatic organization, that's not actually why Trump has been grousing about him and potentially planning to fire him. That conflict isn't caused by Rex Tillerson's massive incompetence, but his public statements that come off as contrary to Trump.
Yeah, I actually respect him for that because he's got more information. He's got more of the nuanced approach. He's got more of an understanding. Even if he's running it like it's a corporation, he gets what needs to be done. And I think speaking up
You're
against...
You're far too you kind know, to him. He doesn't seem to have any... there's not one thing he's done as... like, he will go down. I feel pretty strongly. I think it's not even going to be a hard bet at this point. He will go down as one of the worst, not the worst Secretary of State in American history.
I don't think he was equipped to be the best either way. And I don't think this administration's had anyone that's been well equipped for any of those positions.
I can't disagree with that. the one sort of the most public thing that he's done, which has led to the rumors of the Rexit, as some articles called it, which I'm not going to endorse because that's terrible. But he outright said that the president does not speak for American values.
Wow. That's big.
Yeah. And it, from especially from Rex Tillerson, who has not been one to vocally stand up for American values and who has been vocally against sort of promoting things that we consider American values and norms around the world. I didn't expect this from him, but it showed that there's definitely a growing gap between him in the Trump administration. Yes,
he's no doubt increasingly frustrated. No doubt. And I think a lot of it has to do with North Korea and the Middle East.
Yeah. And that brings us to McMaster, who is also still in and may have gained a reprieve. It seems like the right-wing social media attacks on McMaster have died down lately. I'm sure Cernovich is still attacking McMaster from wherever he is now.
I actually like him. I think he's...
I think he sold his soul, but he's not one of the worst ones there. I mean,
I think when you're chosen to do a job like that, you kind of suck up what your true feelings are and serve the country. And I think he's trying. And I think it's got to be tough because North Korea lately has been quite alarming. And I think him and Mattis have a huge, huge problem on their hands.
Yeah. I mean, I think McMaster was, I mean, qualified before he got hired. He's definitely his reputation has been destroyed. He's been forced to get up there in front of the microphones and make ridiculous statements several times now. And his credibility has been basically just ravaged.
Yeah, I think that's tough for them.
But despite all that, despite the claims that he's a deep state operative trying to take down Trump presidency, he has managed to pull a Sessions and survived after it was looking for a little while like he'd be on the outs.
Did you say pull a Sessions?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Sessions, a month ago, like a little over a month ago, we were all like, will he, won't he, over the Sessions possible firing.
And, well, see, he was very much vocal and, you know, there was a huge
tension there. Oh, he wants Sessions gone.
And he survived, yeah.
Sessions pulled some strength. And also Sessions is, you know, he gave up a post as a senator to take this. He has friends in high places. He would have been super ass pissed if he'd gotten the boot. And he showed Trump that he's actually a politician who knows how politics works and he's not so easy to get rid of. Which is too bad because Sessions terrifies me.
I'm not so terrified by him. I know people who know him personally and he seems, you know, I won't comment on his philosophies and what he's doing. Obviously, it's a bad thing to say because he is our attorney general. But I've heard he's not all that. And it's, you know, people have just, you know, made him into a monster. So,
well, he's very competent and he wants to do monstrous policies. So he is dangerous. I mean, look at the Dreamer Act, the DACA being probably abolished a couple days. That's his baby. All of the racist things that are working out, he's behind most of them.
Well, I was just thinking about the other night. I was thinking, you know, should Charlottesville type of stuff have happened under the watch of an attorney general who, you know, keeps the calm, is on the right track, and is doing all the right things, you know, working in tandem with, I mean, I know that it's you can't control what's happening in every state and, you know, things that happen at rallies. But at the same time, it's got to be a voice of reason, a calm, you know, a calm voice, someone that's bringing security and safety back to the country and bringing people together. And I didn't really hear very much at all.
And also, you need a credible voice, which he would not have been on this topic.
Yeah, well, and I'm not going to say anything.
That brings us to our last, is he or is he not still in the Trump administration? Gary Cohn. He mm-hmm. is still in the administration for the...
He's been very quiet.
Yeah, he is kind of under the radar.
I was wondering how you got anything on him. I'm like, what's the latest on that?
He did, in fact, draft a resignation letter after the Charlottesville, expressing his disgust and his unhappiness with how Trump responded. And then he bravely didn't give it to Trump. So, and...
Why?
And better yet, he leaked it. So, he was... He tried to get credit for drafting a resignation letter. He was too cowardly to actually file.
Why pull that stunt? What
because
do you think
he wanted
about?
To prove that he was, you know, just he wanted to show he was just. I mean, it was like, I hate the term virtue signaling. This was that. He wasn't going to.
Is that like saying, it's like saying I'm not part of this, but at the same time, I had got to keep my job.
Yeah. Yeah. And
pretty much.
And Trump saw through it. Trump was pissed about it. Still is. He is. Noticeably leaving Cohn out of things that previously he would have been involved in or named on. But again, like the market people want him to stay. So we'll see.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Well, it's really hard to find the right person for the right job. But with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites, and with just one click, it all happens with their powerful technology that efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different, because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. There's no juggling of emails or calls to your office, just screen, rate, and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/45.
So that's who's who in the White House. And although recently Russia has not been the focus of the news cycles because Trump's had plenty of other dumpster fires that were actually even more distracting, Mueller has been plugging away consistently week after week. And it's now very clear that that's not going away. It's ramping up still. It's not ramping down. And short of attempts to shut it down by Congress, which there have been some, this is going to be bad news bears for Trump, and probably sooner than later. Not sooner as in next week or next month, but this thing's gaining momentum and it's heading towards places that Trump doesn't want to go.
I have a question, though.
What?
I mean, is there some kind of a protocol, or is it prudent, or would it be considered not prudent to sort of have this, you know, any action on this front happen when we're in the middle of potential crises with like North Korea?
I mean, that's, well, it is going to be ongoing for a long time, and there probably are going to be crises coming up in North Korea. So they will be both going on at the same time.
Or.
But the president can't use a crisis to say he can't be investigated.
Yeah, well, I'm going to throw out something. I'm going to say, or is North Korea, I mean, are we safe on it and we're just flaring it up just so that we can deflect from having anything major? I mean, I think that's too far-fledged, but hey, you know, maybe it's one of the Twitter tactics, you know, of the red herring thing. Who knows? I mean, I'm not saying that Madman Kim's not doing his thing. I'm just saying that in many ways, the North Korea issue would stump anything that Mueller came up with at a point like this.
I don't think so, because it's kind of, I mean, ultimately,
how can you go into a nuclear situation without a commander in chief or a commander in chief that's actually going through some real internal domestic, you know, trouble at a critical time like that? See, that's what I'm saying. It's totally.
There are always crises
me.
In the world.
And yeah. But this is
you
like,
can't say that you can't have a presidential investigation because of that.
No, I'm not saying
Ideal. It's not ideal, but we're definitely not in ideal times right now.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, how does that play out? Because, I mean, what did we have anything happen during Cuban Missile Crisis that Kennedy was dealing with and, you know, in local domestic terms that could, you know, risk his presidency? No. And that's a thing. This is the first time that we've had such a shaky presidency and with some legal stuff happening that could, you know, potentially jeopardize the presidency itself. And yet we're facing a nuclear threat. That's scary.
Again, it's not ideal, but there's not really a solution for it.
Yeah.
They're not going to stop the investigation for that, and they shouldn't.
Well, tell me what's been happening, because, you know, that's been just all in the background just because of all the other stuff happening.
So there's a lot going on. It's turning into this octopus. It's going in many directions. But one of the more interesting ones lately has been Manafort. Manafort was the campaign director that Trump barely knew for, you know, a few weeks or something. That's what Trump says anyway. Manafort, now over a year ago, lost his job as the campaign director because it came out that he was getting paid some money in Ukraine they shouldn't have been getting paid.
Yeah.
And lying about it. Since then, it's come out that he has been involved in possibly a wide variety of financial criminal activities.
Is this a result of what the FBI found when they raided his home?
We don't know what they found yet. And this was, well, what they were, the fact that raid happened was probably motivated by what we know in general. Now, Manafort has a long career of doing a lot of things. And I think most likely, like a lot of the big stuff they're looking at for Manafort has nothing to do with Trump or the Trump campaign. He was shady long before Trump ever ran for office. So who knows what they're focusing on?
Pre-Trump? They're focusing on pre-Trump stuff?
Oh, yeah. Like the Ukraine stuff started way, way, way before that.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not clear what they're focusing on, but there's plenty there for them to find. And like you were saying, not too long ago, they actually had a early hour raid on Manafort's house to seize evidence, which means somewhere they convinced a judge that you can't just get it the normal way because Manafort would destroy the evidence. And the judge believed it and said, yes, you can go surprise them, grab the evidence before you can flush it on the toilet. Now, in more recent news, Mueller's team has teamed up with the New York Attorney General to investigate Manafort, which is a big deal because after the pardon of Sheriff Arpaio, it was reasonable to worry that, well, what if Trump just pardons all these people?
That could happen.
That could happen, but it could only happen for federal offenses. Mm. Offenses that are charged by the state, that there's no pardon power there from the president. The president can't touch that. So by teaming up with the New York Attorney General, Mueller has essentially neutralized that the pardon power. So it doesn't matter if Trump pardons Manafort. Manafort could still go to prison. There's still leverage over him.
Wow.
So he's taken away the ability of Trump to to make sure everyone stays loyal.
To interfere in that. That's okay. So the buffer's in place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And there's also a ton of subpoenas going out. And I find this very mystifying because I've been looking into the subpoenas that have gone out so far for the Manafort stuff. And I don't think we can know right now why they're happening, but they're very interesting. For instance, one of the subpoenas went to Manafort's attorney, which Mueller knows what he's doing. I don't question it necessarily, but that's a super aggressive move.
To subpoena the attorney?
Attorney! Because attorney-client privilege protects a lot of, like, everything between Mueller and an attorney. So you can't use that. You can't get it. I guess it could imply that there's something more going on with that attorney that's not part of her representation of Manafort.
Wow.
I don't know what it means. It's so strange.
And maybe they found something that they feel the attorney didn't handle properly, and so a subpoena is necessary?
Obviously,
what a subpoena is. They want to look into exactly what he did, but
but it has to be something that's not protected by privilege. So it's, I don't think right now we can know. It's fun to speculate, but there's just so much out there that it could be that I think kind of stuck for the moment. But there were also six PR firms that got subpoenas related to Ukrainian activities, sort of lobbying on Ukraine's behalf.
Are these U.S.-based or are these Russian? I mean, sorry, Ukrainian.
Some of them are European, some are American.
Okay, so it's a combo.
And it's not totally clear why this was going on. One of the executives of one of the PR companies was saying that they thought that perhaps Mueller's team was trying to figure out if the work was actually legitimate. i.e. was this just a cover for money laundering? Which would be an interesting parallel to what happened with Michael Flynn and his consulting firm.
I have a legal question, though. Can you actually, can you subpoena foreign companies that way? I mean, what's binding them to a U.S. subpoena?
There are ways to request information from overseas, like, people or corporations.
Maybe at this high level, it's, you know.
Depends on the country they're in. In this case, these were going to the U.S. agencies and U.S. documents, so that wouldn't be much an issue. Okay. But it looks like there are foreign companies involved they're trying to get stuff from. But as far as I've seen, there's not enough out there to know exactly what issues they're going to be facing with that. And then one other subpoena we know went out went to a company called Jade Rock, which is sort of a crisis communications firm. And what was interesting about that one is the head of that firm, of Jade Rock, is a guy named Jason Maloney. And Manafort hired him in like either March or April this year, 2017. To handle the fallout from, you know, everything Manafort's got himself involved in. But the subpoena sought all records since 2010, which...
So if he knew this guy before, obviously.
Maybe. I've not seen any to confirm that. It's possible that Maloney's work at his prior firm, Levick, which has some Ukraine connections, maybe that's what they're going for. But again, like the subpoena on the attorney, it's... It's very intriguing, and it suggests that there's a lot more to the story. There's been no leaks of so far, and no pieces for us to put together.
How far can you go back in a subpoena, as far as you want? Or,
you know, I don't actually know.
Wow.
Presumably, yes. I don't see any reason why you couldn't. I mean, it would be limited by Mueller's investigation, but the scope there for financial crimes involving, like, Russia, that would be pretty broad. I can't imagine it'd be time limited.
I could see a Maloney attorney kind of saying, well, this is out of the scope of your investigation, so we're not going to answer that kind of thing, you know?
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And the last update in the Manafort front, the last big update is, remember that meeting that Don Jr. had back in June of 2016?
Yeah.
The one about adoptions?
Yep.
It was not about adoptions. But when this was all breaking initially, about a month or two back, at one point, Don Jr. was trying to say, oh, well, it's not a big deal. The meeting was really low key. Like, Manafort was up there playing on his phone the whole time. You know, it's
wait, the person that said it was about adoptions was the female.
No. She said something else.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was Don Jr. No, that was actually Trump's lame ass excuse. Trump came up with that one immediately after talking to Putin by himself. So.
Okay.
You never know.
Okay, so what was the meeting about?
Well, the meeting was, again, that was set up to exchange dirt on Hillary, so it's about a lot of things. But again, Don Jr. was trying to say that the meeting was not a big deal because the whole time Manafort's just playing on his phone. Well, now we know that Manafort was taking notes on his phone. Those notes have been produced. There was a partial leak about it, and we know that it's somewhere in the notes he was taking the words donation or donor or something along those lines appeared, and it was very close to the RNC, Republican National Committee. And that set off a huge round of speculation about whether and how donations to the RNC were involved, because if Russia was the one making donations, that's illegal and improper and all that.
I don't know.
I don't think that's likely to be where that's going. More likely, it has to go with the Magnitsky Act. And I will spare you the explanation for now, but as days go on, this is going to be a really important factor. So I imagine we'll have an episode covering this in detail. But one of the sort of sub-issues involved in that whole thing, basically there's a law passed. Putin hates the law, wants it gone. Lobbyists are trying to find ways to get the law gone. And one way they're doing that is to attack the guy who's sort of been promoting the law in the U.S. And there have been allegations made that he made improper donations to various political authorities. So most likely those notes from Manafort were actually about that. And about how Bill Browder, the guy that Putin now really hates, was supposedly making all kinds of illegal, shitty political donations.
Yeah, I don't know about the RNC story because I think that's just hearsay at this point. So.
No, it's not hearsay. It's propaganda from Russia.
Yeah, no.
They're trying to claim Bill Browder is making illegal donations. They have not been able to back it up, but that's what they're trying to the story they're trying to spread. But that's where we're at in terms of the Mueller investigation as it applies to Manafort.
often do you think about your socks? If you're like I used to be, not much. But recently, my kids and I discovered socks that changed the way we think about socks forever. They're called Bombas. Bombas are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. How do we know? Well, my son should know. He plays travel soccer, and my girls roam campuses all day long. They're made from premium cotton. They stay warm in the winter and cool in the summer. Every single Bombas pair comes with a built-in blister tab, an innovative arch support, stay-up technology, and a seamless toe. And they also come in lots of colors, patterns, lengths, and styles. They look great at the gym, they look great at the office, and out in the town. And the best part is, for every Bombas purchase you make, they donate a pair to somebody in need, so you can keep cool, comfortable, and keep contributing with the best socks in the history of feet, Bombas. Right now, you can buy one pair or four at bombas.com/45th today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/45th for 20% off. bombas.com/45th. Get your pair today.
Sarah, what's happening next week, supposedly?
Well, Congress is back in session, and they're discussing, I think, probably the biggest thing since or in parallel with the healthcare reform, and that's tax reform. And I think it's a biggie because it feeds into everything we essentially do financially as a country, obviously. So, you know, the president just went to, was it Missouri? And in a speech, he kind of tried to push Congress to perform like he usually does. You know, every time they're out of session, he'll kind of say, when you get back, I want this done. So that was, you know, the traditional speech that he gave. You know, I think it's important for us to look at, you know, how varied his approaches to tax reform has been. And this is where we could listen to a couple of things that he said.
Go for tax reform, which I've always liked.
Now I want tax reform and tax cuts. We're going to reduce taxes for the people. We pay more tax than anybody in the world, and we're going to reduce taxes.
Repeal and replace should have taken place. The tax bill, tax cuts, tax reform, hopefully they get that done. I hope they get it done.
We're going to undertake one of the great tax reforms and simplifications in American history.
It will provide major tax relief for middle income and for most other Americans. There will be a major tax reduction.
We'll pass massive tax reform to create millions of new jobs and lower taxes for everyone.
My contract calls for lowering taxes on our businesses from 35% down to 15%.
Do you believe in raising taxes on the wealthy?
I do. I do, including myself. I do.
Bottom line, do you want taxes on the wealthy to go up or down?
They will go up a little bit, and they may go up, you know.
But they're going down
above,
in your plan.
No, in my plan they're going down, but by the time it's negotiated, they'll go up.
So just to summarize, the president had said, you know, that he plans to cut the 35% corporate tax rate for the first time in 30 years. So he's trying to benefit regular people by putting more money into, you know, companies and the corporate coffers, basically. But, you know, I think I've been looking at this in a very cursory way, but my thing is that it's apparently it's always historically been accompanied by individual tax reform. And that's the part that I don't see either Congress or the president having any, you know, concrete plans about, because I think the purpose was for the average American, the middle class, to feel like there's going to be some major tax reform or something that's going to alleviate middle America. And that's what's not articulated. So somehow I feel like we're heading into the same zone as we did with the healthcare. It's like, okay, we want to make this change, but no one really knows what or how. So, you know, that's where I think we are.
I will say this is much more, I mean, it's the lowest of low bars, but Trump does have a vaguely... Trump has like a rough understanding and the roughest sense of what tax reform actually involves.
No, you'll be surprised.
Well, he can say that if the healthcare, he couldn't answer the most basic of questions. Again, he thought health insurance costs $1 a month.
No, listen, I've been watching and reading up on some of his statements, and they're so very basic. I wonder what kind of a businessman this was to begin with, just because it sounds like the very, you know, cookie cutter kind of Reaganomics sort of language that he uses, and there's nothing attached to it that sounds very thoughtful. thoughtful, or like he's come up with a formula, or that he has something that's, you know, a bit of a breakthrough, or just kind of adjusts to the paradigm that we're living in right now. There's nothing there. It's just these same kind of public statements on we have to do this, and it's on Congress to do this, and I'm going to do that. And it's just very basic. There's no real plan. And that's my fear. It's like so much depends on tax reform and how we handle, you know, the deficit ceiling and all of our budgets and the federal government spending and, you know, how we get our revenues. And yet we don't have something that's more detailed. I don't understand how it's going to work. There have been breakdowns of what could possibly happen, but there's nothing concrete that says that, first of all, that Trump is aligned with Congress on a lot of the goals, and secondly, how they're going to do it. So he's saying he's going to cut the corporate tax to 15%. And in the meantime, we've heard that Republicans in the House have said 20%. So there's an inconsistency there. Not that it's terribly that much, and not that this is as, you know, antagonistic as, say, the healthcare, but, you know, they're not completely on the same page. And then he keeps revising his plans. And, you know, the problem is both the House and the Senate and the White House has to agree on this. And it might be something just very, very basic that they come out with. You know, the bar isn't set too high and it's something that they can accomplish. But I'm just not feeling the vibes of something major happening, or that one of, you know, any of those breakthrough things that they wanted to do, or that the, you know, the trickle down economic style of Reagan is going to actually happen this time around even. So, and like I said, Congress always paired that up with some kind of cuts for individuals as well. And we haven't heard on that.
I mean, they have yet to prove they can get any major legislation passed. So
yeah,
this is a tough place from the start, reversing that perfect loss record.
Yeah. And I, you know, I follow Paul Ryan's tweets, and, you know, he's saying something about trying to make the tax forms look like a postcard. And I'm like, yay, I would love that. But seriously, what does that even look like? What does that entail? You know, how would that happen? And it's not like we're going to find out the nitty gritty on the outset right now, but I don't see how we could simplify it that much overnight.
Or if that's really what we're, is that a wish list? Yeah. Is that the permanent value is making it easier to do? What if that's not going to cause taxes to be lower? In fact, that suggests there'll be less deductions if it's that simple, which would be a raise on taxes.
Items. The itemized deductions. And that's, you know, and that's what brings me to, you know, I could kind of dissect a lot of facets of this, but there are some that I chose just because they mean something to me as well. And I was like, okay, this is a glaring issue. I need to bring this up, but let's look at this a little bit. So Trump has proposed cutting the number of individual tax brackets from 7 to 3 and setting those rates at like 10, 25, and 35%. But I don't see, like, he wants to double those standard deductions and then do things like expand subsidies for childcare. I don't see anything like how is he going to carry that out? And then there's pieces like, you know, single parents are not going to benefit because he wants to end the head of household filing status. That's a little scary for some of us. And then he also wants to cut estate tax, which, you know, it looks good on the outside. It looks like he's taxing the rich. But then we've had a history of him going back on stuff. And is that going to really make a difference to the average person is a question.
Well, that one won't.
Yeah. And then for some of us who have bought houses, I mean, this is the scariest part, that they're talking about mortgage interest deductions. And that may not be safe anymore because it's one of the most expensive tax breaks in the books right now. So the government spends more than like $80 billion a year on those kinds of things. So, you know, if they're going to increase that to have more revenue for the government, I mean, it's unclear how, you know, home ownership is going to fare. Like, is it going to be less of a, you know, is it going to be less profitable for the average person to own a home? That's a scary part. Because, you know, realtors feel like if you're going to, you know, some of the talk is that they're considering lowering the 1 million loan cap for mortgage interest rate deductions to 500,000 from 1 million. And so basically what the Republican would be doing is lowering the tax benefits of owning a home. And so that affects lots of people. That affects middle America, because the average house in this area, I don't know about you guys out there, I mean, yours is probably a lot more expensive in the D.C. area, but out in Virginia, you can't get a decent house for less than 5 or 4 even. So, you know, how is that going to change home ownership? And then there's also the fact that, you know, the real estate lobby is pretty big. You know, how are they going to take that? That the housing market is such a huge part of how our economy fares, how people do, you know, in terms of having a place to live. That's a little scary to me. Yeah. And I don't think they've articulated what they're going to do on it.
It's very unclear where they're going, what specifics going to be part of the plan, what's not. What is clear is that their agenda is not about reducing taxes for the vast majority of Americans. Just not.
Yeah.
They're going to, making predictions feels worse than useless here because there's so much that could happen. We don't know what. But taking the general trend of their plans and stated goals, it would probably raise taxes for sort of middle American, so to speak.
Well, I'm worried about that because, I mean, that whole concept of following traditional Reaganomics of trickle-down economics where you cut the tax and then the companies get to hire more people and stuff, how does that benefit the person that's already hired? How does that, you know, none of that's been very tangible, and I don't know how that applies now. And all of this supposedly would work if there was solid economic growth. So, I mean, in all my things, we are growing as an economy, but I don't know if it's solid enough for us to be taking, you know, all of this stuff in such a stride.
Well, the president threatened to cut off all trade with China, which would lead us to a massive recession.
He also threatened South Korea, right?
Because right now is the right time to even renegotiate a trade deal with South Korea, let alone just like say we're going to end it. But he actually proposed ending, not just trade deals, ending trade with China.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing that people talk about is the raising of the debt ceiling. That's tied into tax reform because basically the debt ceiling is, you know, how the government's ability to raise money to finance its operations. And, you know, Republicans want to push for that, to raise it. And by the way, it's been raised about 74 times since 1962. So it was like 18 times under Ronald Reagan, 8 times under Bill Clinton, 7 times under G.W. Bush, like Big Bush, and then 5 times under... No, actually, that was 7 times under, you know, Bush Jr. So, you know, raising that debt ceiling, they're going to have to get the Democrats on the same page on this. And that's a big thing. You know, how are you going to adjust the corporate tax rates and then the individual tax rates and still worry about raising the debt ceiling so that we have enough money and we don't go into a further deficit? That, to me, is scary. It's going to affect a whole bunch of things. It's like all interconnected, right? So can't separate these things. And then you've also got the Joint Committee on Taxation, the Treasury Department, and Tax Policy Center. They're all saying that, you know, they're not all on the same page on a lot of stuff. Even Mnuchin, I think, you know, he said that multiple economic studies have shown that over 70% of the costs of the corporate tax are actually borne by the worker. And so that contradicts what the president's trying to accomplish with a corporate tax cut. So I worry about all this because, you know, just being a new homeowner, thinking about, you know, how our taxes are going to come in and what we're going to have to deal with in terms of real estate and the debt ceiling in general, whether they're going to raise it. I mean, even if they do, they have to have a good amount of Democrats supporting them on this. And I haven't seen any signs of that type of stuff happening lately.
And all this uncertainty is going to undermine the economy its own way, too.
Yeah. And you know what I think? I feel like they're trying to vindicate themselves after the healthcare stuff. And you know what? The worst thing that could happen is for Republicans and conservatives to look really bad if they come up with something totally very basic and tepid and kind of go, look, we accomplished this. And everyone's like, okay, and so?
That's kind of the best case scenario here. They need a win. They cannot have a loss again. They're going to find a way to call it a win. And let's just hope it's like not destructive.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this whole time, I think, you know, Trump has been trying to appear to be like kind of the Reagan type of Republican. Not that he's anything close to that, but, you know, it's people tout him and his trickle down economics and all that stuff, you know, as, you know, it's a supply chain based economic structure, right? But the problem is that he didn't cut Social Security or Medicare payments at all. And he did have increased spending. And if we're headed that way, then we have to think about the debt ceiling, the deficit, all that stuff. So the tax cuts. And I think somebody tweeted on one of our pages about, you know, how the tax reform bill is going to affect how education, what portion of education gets funded, not funded, the federal funding for stuff that, you know, was traditionally always given to states. And so it's everything's intertwined. And I worry about them coming up with something that's just very basic and didn't do anything really for the average person. And how will that affect his base is another question. If they were expecting that, then and you come up with something that doesn't really affect them directly or right away, you know, is he going to erode his base or is it going to still be loyal?
Again, a bill that doesn't do shit could be a best case scenario here.
Well, I think the corporate tax cuts are going to come because, you know, there's this whole thing of creating jobs and the way to do that is to allow corporations to have enough cash to be able to do that. It doesn't really tell us how individuals would benefit, people who are already hired. And then, you know, like I said, traditionally you've had the individual tax reform accompanied with that corporate tax cut. But I haven't heard much on how that structure is going to look or even if Congress and the White House agree on how that's going to look.
Now we'll see if a Republican controlled government can even pass simple tax reform.
Yeah.
A question that like shouldn't have been. Wouldn't have been really imaginable until the Trump era.
I'm trying to imagine what could happen that could, that, like I said, vindicate them and go, look, they actually got this done. This is fantastic. And things turn around a little bit. But as I said, I don't know if there's a great amount of coordination between this White House and Congress on what the goal is and how they're going to do it. Again, the same thing as we had with healthcare.
What are you talking about? He tweets at them all the time.
Yeah, going to go by the tweets, right? Yeah, we know what he's thinking. We just don't know if everybody else agrees. So, yeah.
I don't think Trump cares what they're thinking. I think that's kind of the issue.
Yeah, I think Congress is just going to do what it has to do. It's the question is he going to agree with them? Is he going to let them have what they want? And are the Democrats going to be on board? Because none of this is going to happen if they don't have enough support. You know.
If they can get Trump a bill that he can call a win, he'll sign it.
Well, he's got to include the individual tax cut rates. I mean, tax rate cuts for people. Otherwise, Democrats are not going to be on board. Because on the outside, it just looks like you're cutting company, you know, taxes and giving them more money. And that they put in their coffers and all that happens, you get more dividends on stocks and, you know, they get richer. So there's got to be something that accompanies it that balances out. And, you know, even as a conservative, I say that's fair. You have to have a balance, you know.
Well, if they're not really concerned with that balance and all they're looking for is to have a quick run on profits for corporations, then at this point, why not take what you can get? They're not going to get the whole shebang. They're barely lucky to get anything. So if that's the one win they can put on the scoreboard, maybe they're happy with that.
Well, I think there's a lot of pressure on Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell because they're going to have to get those Democrats to increase the debt ceiling and also think about how this tax reform bill is going to look and what parts of it are going to be agreeable to the Democrats to get them on board.
Well, we'll be back next Tuesday to update you on how tax has gone, assuming it's gone anywhere. No promises. I would not be surprised if next week we're here with an update that says they forgot about taxes. They're now worrying about God knows what.
No, they can't forget about taxes. It's just
you said it now, but I would. It's not impossible. Next week we'll be here and be like, actually, no one talked about taxes at all.
Yeah, but listen, they're back in session, and they're going to have to do something. The question is, what and how does it look? We've seen a lot of things that the president said, and Paul Ryan's focused on it, but I don't see it's exactly to me like the healthcare stuff. There's no great outline. Maybe the outlines with a handful of people, and they're going to unveil it, you know. But it's also a matter of, do we have confidence in our leaders in Congress and even in this White House to coordinate and come up with something that's agreeable to Democrats and have something that kind of, like I said, vindicates them on the healthcare front.
Well, next week we'll have an update on that and hopefully no updates on North Korea.
Well, that'll be interesting.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345. And you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.